Well, hello everybody. Welcome back. Call a meeting to order. Representative Bly moves the minutes of the last Thursday's meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and we'll go back to the students who've come again from all over the state, it looks like. I don't know who's going to present them. Come on up. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. First of all, thank you for allowing myself and my fellow students to the opportunity to testify today regarding issues that are facing students across the state and attending the Minnesota's state universities. My name is Justin McMartin, and I serve as the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm a senior at Southwest Minnesota State University, where I'm double majoring in marketing and international business. We're here today to talk about affordability of public higher education. As most of you know, tuition at state universities has gone up very quickly, an average of 70% over the last 5 years. When cuts were made to public higher education, several years ago, students paid the price. Of the $191 million that was cut from the Minsky system, $173 million of it was made up for in tuition increases. Those tuition increases had a significant impact on student lives. Many worked more hours, some to the detriment of mental aids and academic success. Some took fewer classes to lessen the financial impact, which meant that they would not only extend their graduation date, but also would inevitably pay more in tuition in the long run due to more increases. Some students even dropped out of school completely hoping to earn some money before returning to school. Many, however, have increased the amount of money they are borrowing in student loans. In fact, there was a 48% increase in the amount of students attending state universities who borrowed between 2001 and 2005. Students graduating from our state universities in 2005 graduated with an average of $18,500 in loan debt. At least half of our graduates have debt. At Southwest Minnesota State University, where I attend, 83% of the 2005 graduates had student loan debt. Even though I work 25 to 30 hours per week at the Southwest Marketing Advisory Center, I have still had to borrow $33,000 in loans to pay for my education, including $14,000 in private loans. While I know that my education is valuable, I am very concerned that I will have difficulties paying these loans back. And like most students I represent, I worry whether I will be able to find a job right out of college that will offer a salary large enough to repay this huge debt. We are working to combat this problem at a variety of levels, we meaning the students. We work with administration on our campuses to keep increases in tuition down. We've been meeting with state senators and representatives about the need to fund public higher education, and we're even working at the federal level to cut interest rates and make it easier for students to pay back their debt. In fact, this afternoon I'm planning on making some calls to our U.S. representatives about the votes we'll be taking tomorrow about that. Students are here today asking for your help. An investment in public higher education is an investment in the future of Minnesota. Students are asking for the system to be funded at a level that will freeze tuition at current levels for the next 2 years. Additional funding will help maintain the high-quality education offered at state colleges and universities while keeping tuition and student debt levels down. For many years, the benefits of having a well-funded education system have been recognized by the people of Minnesota and many legislators, but there's been a disconnect between the recognition and the legislative decisions that have been made. This past fall, during many of the campaigns, higher education costs were a frequent topic, with many candidates promising to help stop the rising cost of tuition. While the ballots were cast last fall, voters sent the message that higher education is a priority. There's no better time than here and now to show Minnesota's commitment to higher education, to deliver on the promises made during the campaigns this past fall. When I began preparing my materials for the session this year, I realized that with my background in marketing, that we were essentially preparing what I would call a sales pitch. However, after speaking with many of the students about the difficulties they face in paying for their education, I realize that the issues facing students in Minnesota tell the stories themselves and sell themselves. These are just a few of the debt stories that we've been able to collect from students in the university and college system. The students that we have lined up here to speak today will provide a vivid picture of situations which many students attending state universities face. They will tell you how the cost of their education has surpassed their ability to pay for it. They will tell you that the price of tuition is out of reach for themselves and their families without taking out large loans. They will tell you that about making decisions about their future paths in life based on the debt that they owe today. I hope that their stories will illustrate for you the urgency that is required in this situation. Now is the time to reaffirm Minnesota's commitment to public higher education and to show the nation and the world that our education, that our students' education and educating our population in Minnesota is a priority. So at this point, I'll take any questions. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to speak today, as well as my fellow students.
Thank you, Justin. Are there any questions from the testifier? I guess, go ahead.
Thank you for coming, Justin. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask, on the $33,000 in loans that you have for education, what portion of that is tuition and fees, and what portion would be living expenses?
I would say about half of it has been the cost of my tuition. Has gone up, and in the beginning, it was probably about a third of it. Living in the dorms, those expenses seem to be more, higher. And as I moved into my apartments, I've been able to find cheap apartments, and so those costs have decreased. But as those have decreased, my tuition has increased. So it's about 50% of it.
Thank you.
Justin, is the Student Association, they're all on record then for a freeze in both years of this biennium, and being a marketing business major that you are, so where do we pick up that money? You're assuming the legislature is going to pay for it.
The most important thing and the first thing that we've talked about is defending the inflationary costs that Minsky has proposed. In their budget, they're only planning on the state appropriating $57 million for that cost, and then they were going to have a $25 million reappropriation within Minsky, but to add the additional money onto that, to have the $140 million, is the first way that we can freeze tuition for the students. And of course, everything else in the request for the Minsky system would benefit students in keeping our public universities and colleges at that high quality level that that we've been come to know throughout the United States and throughout the world.
Okay, any other questions? But, Representative Lawrence?
Yeah, I came in about halfway through your testimony, so I apologize for that. Did you receive a Pell Grant and a state grant?
I never received a Pell Grant. One semester, I believe, I received, I'm not exactly sure on that, but it was right around $98, I believe, for my Minnesota state grant. I got that in my freshman year of school. And the rest has been through federal Stafford and subsidized and unsubsidized loans is what I've been, my financial aid I've been available to get, and then the rest I've decided to go the private lender route with.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Reiner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask whether the Student Association is working at all to leverage their request for a tuition freeze with the Minsky system. Recognizing that certainly the legislature is a part of the answer, my question is, are we the whole answer?
We work constantly within the system at all levels on our campuses. Today we have some of our student leaders from each of our campuses. Well, we weren't able to get one from every campus here today. But they all work in their student governments, at the administration at their campus level, and then also through us at the Minsky level. Tomorrow I'll be spending my entire day at the Minsky Board of Trustees talking with the trustee members about these issues. And we sit on various committees in policy making and other issues like that to help keep the cost of tuition down at that level. And so this is just the other level of it that we work at.
Okay. No other questions? Thank you, Justin, very much for your testimony. And next we have Richard Howden, the third. Welcome to the committee. Just give your name and go ahead, Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing us to come here and speak with you all today. My name is Rick Howden, and I serve as the Vice Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm also a student at Winona State University, where I am a senior this year. I'm majoring in business administration and minoring in political science. Like many other middle-class families, my family was not able to save thousands of dollars to send me or my younger sister, who will be graduating high school this year, to college. As a first-generation college student, tuition costs were not something that my family had made plans for in the beginning. I've had to take out loans to cover every year of my college career, and this is my fourth year, and I will have one more semester of loans yet after this year is completed. That means that I will have a total of 4.5 years in student loans to cover everything from tuition, fees, books, residence hall expenses for 3 years, rent for 2 years, and other necessary living expenses. So far, I've borrowed $48,000. $36,500 of that is in private loans, which are accruing interest very rapidly. I already have more than $2,800 in interest on my private loans. Looking ahead, I'm extremely concerned about how I will be able to repay these loans. Looking back the other day, I started to wonder where exactly this $48,000 in loans went over the last 4 years. So I did a few quick calculations. I've spent approximately $21,500 in tuition over the last 4 years. Winona State University implemented a mandatory laptop program a number of years ago, which contributed to the $5,400 in fees that I paid. In addition, I lived in a residence hall for 3 years, which cost a total of $8,700 for room and board. I also paid $320 in rent and an apartment that I share with two other students this year, which totals to $3,800. Finally, I pay an average of $500 per semester for textbooks for a total of $4,000 over 4 years. That means just to pay for the tuition, fees, textbooks, and a place to live, I spend $43,400. That leaves me with about $1,100 per year, or about $96 a month, for any other expenses that I may have. I've been working 20 hours a week this year, but it's still very difficult to make ends meet. As MSUSA's vice chair, I'm here not just to tell my own story about how student loan debt and high tuition have impacted me, but also to represent the thousands of other students attending our state universities who cannot be here with us today. The students I represent are starting a new semester. Some may be looking forward to graduating. Many may be back next year to continue their education. All of them, however, are looking for relief from large tuition increases and growing student debt. They are counting on you for help, and MSUSA supports a 0% tuition increase for our students. Please support the funding to make this a reality for the next 2 years. And at this point, I yield for any questions.
Thank you very much, Rick. Any questions? I'm just curious, I have a question for you on it. What's the difference between your interest rates and your private loans and your public or government loans?
My private loans are starting, I have four different ones. They start at like 8.25%, and the highest percent is at 9.75, I believe, right now. And I believe my, I'm not sure what the unsubsidized federal loans are at.
And Congress is going to lower those, I think. Currently, or they're going to. Well, I'll tell you, I got to give you credit. I mean, I just can't believe that. I know when I was in college, I spent a little more than you on extracurricular activities. So, I guess times have changed.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Peterson. Do you have a comment on that over there?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Casey.
Mr. Chair.
Hart, did you have a question of the...
I was just wondering if that was 3.2%.
No, it wasn't. Casey, or Carmody? Is that
Carmody.
Carmody. Yep. Welcome to the committee, Casey.
Thank you. All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Casey Carmody, and I am from Pipestone, Minnesota. I am currently a student at Minnesota State University, Mankato, majoring in political science and public relations with a minor in speech communication, and I will graduate in May of 2008. My parents are divorced and have not been able to help me pay for college. My dad and my stepmother have 6 children between them, which makes paying for college for any one of us pretty much nearly impossible. My mom currently works as a high school secretary, but has a brain tumor that, although not fatal, did not allow her to work for about a year. Obviously, financing my education was not an option for her either. As a result, I have been paying for my college education myself with work, grants, scholarships, and loans. Right now, I have about $30,000 in student loan debt and expect to have around $40,000 in debt by the time I'm finished with school. Until recently, I had two jobs and was working 20 to 30 hours per week. I have got down to one job because I found a cheaper apartment and because I wanted to be more involved on campus. I am very worried about the amount of debt I have accumulated to pay for my education. Originally, I had planned to go straight to graduate school after I finished at Mankato, but I've decided to put that off to find a job instead in order to start repaying some of my loans. I have considered trying to find a job in Washington, D.C., in a legislative office or a PR firm, something like that. However, I am now thinking about maybe looking for a job at a college or a university, just kind of in the hopes that I can get a break on tuition for graduate school. Also, I do serve as a tour guide for prospective students in Mankato, and one of the questions that I often hear from students is about financial aid and other questions like that, so I can't imagine that my story is entirely unique. After the tuition increases I have seen as a student and the student debt that I will have to repay, I really can't help but wonder what price tomorrow's students will face if they decide to attend to MSU, Mankato, or any other school in our system. And that's all I have. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions for Casey at all? Okay, thank you for your testimony. And next, Jennifer Oren. Welcome to the committee, Jennifer, and just go ahead and state your name and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jennifer Oren, and I'm a student at Minnesota State University, Moorhead, and I'm double majoring in psychology and elementary education. I'm married with two kids, a 2- and 3-year-old, both boys, and my husband's a fireman. He's also a guardsman in the 119 Fire Wing. I'm in school working towards a degree to hopefully someday help contribute to my family's income. However, sometimes it concerns me when I think about all the debt and all the sacrifices that my family and I am making in order to afford my education. So far, I have $13,000 in student loans, but I'm estimated to borrow $32,000 when I'm finished. Even with two incomes, this amount is going to be very difficult to repay. I want to become a teacher to help people, but $32,000 in debt is kind of daunting on a teacher's salary. In addition, we are hoping to begin saving for our kids' education, but that'll be very hard to do when I'm trying to repay my student debt. In addition to the stress of being a full-time student and being a mom, my husband is leaving for Iraq on Sunday, and so I'm going to have to deal with other responsibilities of basically being a single mom while he's gone. Unfortunately, there are many stories just like mine. Across the state, there are students trying to make ends meet and, raise a family as well. They're struggling to pay for child care and balance the needs of their family and the needs of a better future. You can make a difference. Cheaper tuition makes fewer student loans. I want a better education, and I want a better life for my family. I just kind of wish it was a little easier. Thank you.
Jennifer, thank you. Did you get any help at all with your child care at the college?
My kids go to child care at the university, and they did seek out a grant, and so I did apply for that, and I have received some funding for that. It's a U.S. United States Department of Education grant, and so that helps pay for some of the costs. Even though that covered almost half of it, I still pay almost $2,000 a semester for child care.
Hmm. Representative Hortman.
I was wondering if when your husband leaves, if you'll have any type of financial assistance from the guard to help. I can't imagine going to school, I imagine right now your husband's helping you with the kids so they can study. And I'm wondering if there's any assistance that you're going to be getting when he's gone to help with child care and things like that.
Not really, no. I apologize if I'm getting a little emotional. My family and his family are close, so hopefully they'll be able to help me out when he's gone.
And Mr. Chairman, Jennifer, have you connected with your family support group that your reserve or guard?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Please do that. Thank you.
Representative Potter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of the stories are compelling. Yours is most sincerely very touching, and our hearts all go out to you and what you're going to be going through. I just have a question. It's kind of along the lines. There likely is a veterans support center at your college. Have you been able to touch base with them as far as a family of a veteran to be able to seek some, or a family of a serviceman to be able to seek some assistance?
The only thing that brought to my attention was going to the guard. We had a briefing, and there's just like a family connection group where we call each other and kind of get together and send packages and stuff like that, just kind of as a support system.
Okay. So. Representative Mahoney.
Your story is compelling and hard to hear at times. Mm-hmm. But my question relates to, do you expect to be able to continue on in school with not so much with the family pressures, whether they're child care or work or whatever, but financially, are you going to be able to finish up this year and continue on?
Yeah, we've been saving up for when he's going to be gone and stuff. I mean, obviously he's still going to be paid, but the first couple months are going to be a little tough because he won't be paid right away.
Representative Norton.
I don't really have a question, but I think I would like to just raise an issue that I heard here today and I heard earlier, which is this line that you said about saving for your children's education. As a parent myself of children in college, we've faced the same issue. We are paying off our student loans still at my age, I hate to say, our own student loans. At the same time, our children are going to college. And I think you've raised a real issue here that there are many of us out here, and our children also don't qualify perhaps for those programs because of our income now as we've gotten older. But we still are paying substantial monthly payments. So I think this is an issue we need to think about as well. And I don't have an answer, and you probably don't either because you're just stepping into that with young children. But it's something I think as a committee we should continue to think about. And also as the mother of a son that's been in Iraq, I feel for you, and good luck.
Well, Representative Norton and members, Ms. Oren, if we've heard anything here the last 3 days, we've heard about the debt that these students like yourself are just being laden with. And, you know, the tuition obviously is a big part of that. And I think Rick and the last testifier broke it down pretty good for us, and the tuition increases all through the 90s and particularly in the early 2000s have contributed really to an escalating debt load that you are carrying. And, you know, Representative Haas, I think you're the chief author, if I'm not mistaken, of the governor's bill dealing with military and augmenting the GI Bill, I guess, with state dollars. And perhaps, you know, you probably being a young legislator, well, not chronologically, but, you know, young, otherwise, but in your second half term, you probably realize, but of course by now, that you don't fully have to carry the governor's bill as he proposed it to you.
That's correct.
And, you know, maybe testimony from Jennifer here would help you think of some ways where we can help the spouse that's
And certainly as we bring sections of the governor's bill in parts and in its collectiveness as an omnibus bill. Those will be discussed and changed also in committee. I mean, it's certainly not going to make that so as committee members are looking at that. Those can be changed. I did sidebar with Representative Severson, who is a co-author and an expert in many of these areas. And I don't see the target of this individual case being hit very hard by the governor's bill. The GI Bill would be a very much benefit for the spouse coming back from Iraq. But there is some other programs, and I would yield to Mr. Severson, Mr. Chair, if you so wish.
Representative Representative Stevenson, do you want to handle that?
Thank you. I think some of the things that we've worked on in the past is, in particular, through the private sector, there's military family support activity, and the Support Our Troops license plate where you pay $30, and I encourage everyone in here to buy one. Because we have those monies that go split between the military affairs and the veteran affairs, and those go into a private 501c3 that has been charged with disseminating these dollars to needy military families. So if you do have some needs or some short-term needs that need to be filled with that, there are sources that are available through private sector fundraising that can also help in that particular situation. And I encourage you to look into that, because our desire, and I believe as a state, is to support those who are sending over on our behalf, and that's one of the avenues that we've been able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Stevenson.
Any other questions? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question that's a little bit different again. I just wanted to know if your parents are college graduates or are you a first-generation college student?
No, my parents are college graduates. My mom actually graduated in Brazil. That's where she's from. But, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions then? The witness, thank you very much and good luck to you. Lee Trotman. Welcome to the committee, Lee, and just give your name and go into your testimony.
My name is Lee Trotman. As previously stated, I thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing us to be here today. Currently, I'm a senior at Southwest Minnesota State University, working in my major, which is history and political science. I currently work approximately 20 to 30 hours a week and full-time during the summers to help with my education, and I make roughly around $9,000 a year to help that. But currently, I have $20,000 in student debt. And when I graduate this year, I will be roughly $25,000 in debt. And that really doesn't help with my future plans as what I'd like to do. When I finish at Southwest, I'd like to join AmeriCorps and go out into the world or within this country and help, you know, in service programs and stuff like that, and then go on to graduate school after that. And I find that a lot of people in my situation who perhaps would like to go on to AmeriCorps or different service projects, things like that, may not feel the motivation or, you know, that type of thing to go on to that because they're debt-laden, you know what I mean? And they're like, well, I could do this or I could go out and work and make more money or, you know, potentially make more money right after school. But as we know, you know, it might help society and greater America as a whole if more students would go into these service projects and different things like that. So that's kind of the story that I bring to this table. And also, the like previously stated by other students going on to graduate school. I mean, right now, like the benchmark, you know, for students is to get through, you know, the bachelor's degree and then pursue some sort of education after that. And I don't see it becoming viable to a lot of us when we're already so far in debt and then having to take out that debt, more debt with graduate school. So that's the kind of testimony and story that I bring to this. And just remember this, whenever tuition increases, so does the student loan debt. So keeping tuition from increasing now can help tomorrow students, and it will help them borrow less and will help out Minnesota as a whole. Thank you for allowing us to speak, and with that, I yield for questions.
Okay, any questions? Representative Clark. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Trotman, I think I'd like to ask you just to maybe elaborate a little bit to the committee what happens when a person does join AmeriCorps, what the wages are, and what some of the services are, because I think, you know, this is it'll probably speak for itself, but I mean, this is an incredible giving back to the community that deserves some, I think, special support way beyond what it's getting. But anyway, I'd like him to maybe just tell us what would you be earning and...
Right now, my current, what I'm looking at is a city year program in Columbus, Ohio, which it'll be $160 a week, and then it's a 10-month program, and then after that, it is a $4,500 stipend for education that may go towards my previous loans or towards a degree of some sort after that.
Could, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Could you just say anything more you know about any of the other AmeriCorps services that are that students are providing?
Okay. AmeriCorps as a whole is a very broad thing that there are many services that fit under the AmeriCorps umbrella. I know some of the services that I saw that are in the St. Paul, Minneapolis-St. Paul area is where students go around, or young adults go around, and help immigrants and people coming into the country learn how to use computer skills, gain skills in technology. I know another program that was in Northern California where young adults went out and worked in the environment, helped protect areas from wildfires and different things like that. It's, like I said, it's a very broad program.
Mr. Trotman, the $4,500 and the dollars that you can apply, is there a two-year program, too, where you can double that amount? Or?
Yes, if you, well, I think it depends on each situation that you're in AmeriCorps. Like, that's for the city-year program, which I'll be in, that's $45 that you can use. And then, yes, if you decide to go on for another year, you could potentially get, I guess, $9,000, yeah, roughly.
Representative Wolfman?
Well, I just wanted to say good for you, number one. AmeriCorps is wonderful. My daughter was in AmeriCorps, and she got, at the end of the service, you do get some loan forgiveness. Although doing it for 2 years is mighty hard on basically a vow of poverty salary.
Mm-hmm. Which most of them are accustomed to already.
Which you're in training for, yeah, right now. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's really pretty bare bones. The experience is wonderful, though. And you do get some loan forgiveness, which is a positive.
Representative Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, congratulations, sir. I really appreciate the service you're doing. Do you get housing or anything? I hope you're getting
the I'm currently in the process of finding that out. That's kind of been the determining factor of how I'm going to do this, because, if, like I said, you make $160 a week, and this is like a 40 to 50 hour type of job. I'm hoping that I'll find some sort of housing. I don't know yet, so I'm still in that process.
Okay. Representative Ruth, did you have anything else? No? Okay, Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may or may not know the answer to this question, but do you know if during the time that you're in AmeriCorps, do you get a grace period for your loan repayment, or does the interest not accumulate?
Basically, during the time while you're in AmeriCorps, your loans are put on hold, yes, and the interest is, I'm not sure if it's frozen at that current rate, because I do have a lot of private loans and stuff like that, so I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that more, but I do know that you are given the grace period while in AmeriCorps, yes.
Thank you.
Well, Representative Wolf, my daughter was also in AmeriCorps, and then she... She had a good time, and then she came back and started driving truck, and I think she joined the Teamsters, and now she's the union organizer for Aspen. So
there you go.
She really has been progressing.
Yes. You know, what my daughter did with living arrangements, there were like 6 AmeriCorps volunteers, and they all took their little $160 a week, and they rented an apartment together, and they weren't there much. But when they were, it was pretty fun.
Tips on poverty from the there you go, and I'm sure you're all used to it already.
So long as it's not tips on personal spending in college from the chairman.
Well, listen, if I gave tips on that, they'd all be A students. Okay, any other questions then, Mr. Trump? Thank you very much for coming from the committee. And Claire Ware. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, committee chair and, I mean, yeah. Good afternoon, chair and committee members. My name is Claire Ware, and I thought that I'd just come down here to tell a story about myself because I think it's very important that somebody will hear me, because it's a lot of people like me that are poor and not fortunate enough, or nobody telling me how to pay for college, just to go to college. So my name is Claire Ware. Like I said, I go to Metro State. I recently graduated from MTCC about a year ago. So I was just going for my AA degree to be in the urban teacher program. Since then, I've changed my major 3 times to see how I can make an impact on the community. And I decided to, wanted to teach in the power of you, so I changed my major to be a college professor at Metropolitan University. And when I went to MCTC, it was kind of easy because I applied for FAFSA and student loans, and then I got a work study job. So then after I graduated, I went to Metropolitan State, and that's where I ran into the problem. Tuition was increasing. So I recently, due to some family obligation, I started school, like I said, in September 2001. Because of family obligation, I've done hospice care. I lost my father, and now I'm in the process of losing my mother. So I took the last semester off, and then I was contacted by the consolidators that if I didn't return back to school, that I would have to pay my loan back. So when they gave me the shocking news, they told me that I owed $34,000, and I was like, how can I owe $34,000, and I took about a year off in semesters. So then they told me the interest rate, and I rounded it off to about around $2,000. So that was $34,000, and I did a math on the interest rate, around $2,000. So my current loan debt is $33,909, and my interest on my loans is $1,887.70. So then I went back to the table to do the math again, and I said, what would it take for me to get my master's degree? So I said, applying for a loan every year, $5,000 a semester, that rounds me off to about around, I don't know, I like to spend money, so about around $60,000 when I get my master's degree. So then the reason why I changed my major so much is because, you know, like she said, when you're in a teacher program, you don't make any money. So I decided to look into it a little bit more. So I began to talk to the counselors at my school. And I figured that in order to pay back these loans, I have to make like $67,000 a year. So that's why I became a professor at a college. And in my closing, I would just like to say that I'm really serious when I came here. I took time away from my school to come in. I'm really serious, and I want people to hear me when I say this, that if you guys keep increasing tuition, people like me will have to drop out of college, go get a job. I got to help support my mom, who's terminally ill, and you know how expensive the doctor bills are. I have 2 sons that I'm trying to get enrolled inside of college, and I have about like 6 grandkids. So, I'm the first generation to go to college. And I am the role model for this generation in my family, because it's only a couple more people went to college more than me, but I'm trying to tell my kids that if without an education, you can't have a fight. So that's why I came here to say that if you don't lower the tuition, that a lot of students will drop out of college, and we got to send a message that we can't be in debt all our lives. So if I get that PhD, which I'm going to get, that's going to run me. I'll be in a lot of series. There may be $100,000 by the time I graduate. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Ware? I guess I have one. And that is your current debt that you accumulated. You went to Minneapolis Technical and Community College, so I'm assuming you didn't bring up that big of a debt load there. So this is just now recently when you were going to Metro State that... Right. And what year are you in?
I'm in my bachelor's degree.
So you've got
another year, because, you know, I said I took a semester off. So I got another year. I graduated in spring of 2008.
So you're a junior right now?
Yes.
All right. Any questions at all? Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a comment, I guess. Congratulations on being a role model for your family. I think that is an awesome message that you're sharing with us, and many others have said the same, that as first-generation college students, you do carry a large burden because other people are looking to you to see how successful you can be and how you can balance everything. So I just congratulate you on that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from any of the testifiers? that came down.
Mr. Chair,
Dustin, do you have anything else to say to us?
If I could just thank everybody again for allowing us, and thank you personally for allowing the students to come and speak like this. It's been a wonderful experience, I think, for all the students.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question that I wanted to direct to any or all of them on how well prepared they were for college. Did any of you find that you needed to do some college prep classes? Basic math or intro to algebra kinds of things, or college prep reading, writing kinds of classes in order to be more fully prepared for college.
If any of you want to come down and answer that, feel free to come down, and maybe if the pages could pull up a couple extra chairs there in case more than one wants to come down.
Well, I started school. I'm 45 now, so I started school when I was like 35. So, because I hadn't went to, I was in the top of my class when I went to high school because I hadn't went to college in a long time. I had to start at ABE Math. Mm-hmm. So I went to ABE Math, I went to college, algebra, Math 60, mm-hmm. and then I skipped Math 60, 75, and I went over to Metro State, took exploring functions, and then I'm in liberal arts math for teachers. So I did start at the bottom. It costs you more money when you start at the bottom. That's why I try to tell these kids in high school, top out in the A and B range. So when you go to college, you see a lot of high school students there testing into A, B, math, and we don't want to see that as teachers. We want to see them top up into college algebra. Mm-hmm.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I would like to know from the traditional students, are you finishing in 4 years, or is it taking six, or what?
In my case, when I went to school, I thought I was going to be a computer scientist. Soon found out that C++ and I don't get along very well. So I changed majors right off the bat to justice administration and found out that really wasn't my niche either. So I changed majors 3 times, and it's going to take me about 4.5 to 5 years to graduate. And that's with 2 majors. And that was a common theme I think you saw with all of us up here, is that they're taking 2 majors because to fill in the needs of the marketplace, I guess we see that our future is so uncertain sometimes that a lot of people have decided to take on, double majors, marketing, international business, or something that's related to it, but just something else in case, that industry doesn't pan out.
Any of the other testifiers would like to comment on their years of service?
Sure, I can comment on that for a moment. I actually transferred schools after my freshman year. I transferred down to Mankato, and I was originally planning on going to school to be an English teacher. And I thought that was a great idea until I got about halfway through the program and said, maybe I really am not that fascinated with teaching as much as I thought. And so I decided to switch majors to a public relations degree. That was something that interested me more, working with people, things like that. And I realized that the program there was going to set me back an extra year regardless, no matter what I did. So that's when I picked up the political science degree. So I'm going to be there for 5 years altogether, but I guess that's just from my experience of just being unsure and getting about halfway through a program before realizing, maybe this isn't, what I wanted for my life. So.
Representative Murphy, did you have another question?
I do have another question from the traditional students that are taking out these loans and $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 loans. When do you see yourselves committing to a relationship and planning to get married? And how long will it take you then to buy a house?
They're all looking for rich spouses, right? Aside from that, does anybody want to comment on?
Just recently, my cousin actually got married, and she graduated from MSU Mankato this last spring, and she got married this last summer. And between her husband, who is continuing to go to school at Mankato, and her dad, and she's working at the hospital in Mankato right now, I think they've accumulated somewhere between $40,000. They live in a small apartment in Mankato, and nothing special. But I mean, I think it is something that definitely weighs in my mind when I'm looking forward to, you know, the rest of my life. It's something I think about, that before I want to make any commitments like that, I want to make sure that I'm financially secure. I don't want to put that, you know, debt burden on somebody else. And I think a lot of other students feel that way as well.
Representative, go ahead, Representative Murphy.
I have served the family this summer. Young woman became engaged to a young man. Father had was a friend of mine, and it grumbled all spring, all summer, that he was afraid that she was going to marry this boy that had this college debts, and they had worked very, very hard to make sure that she didn't have any college debts. And but she brought Mr. Wonderful home, and according to the dad, and Mr. Wonderful said, if I didn't see this $60,000 debt all the time, I'd probably think he was wonderful. But it really ticks me off. And all summer long, there was just misery in that family, and the going back and forth and the pressures on that young woman. But they got married in November.
Well,
and Dad was still grumbling.
Thanks for the...
but, you know, it's something that they have their face with that...
Well, Representative Murphy, you can tell that constituent of yours it was either the nunnery or find someone with debt. I think to find someone debt-free out there when you've heard the testimony from these
students, it's so scary.
It's an impossibility.
It's so scary.
And we have, I see, you know...
They'll be 50 before they can have children.
Lucky they didn't go for that.
In some cases, that's not totally true either. We won't get into biology lessons here today. Representative Clark, you had a question.
Yeah, I did.
Nothing on family planning or anything?
No. Actually, I missed a couple of testimonies, but it seems like in the students here and in ones that I teach, that every student has at least one job, and I guess I was wondering how many students here have more than one job, and do any of your jobs have health benefits?
Does anybody want to comment on that?
I can talk just briefly. I had a work-study job as well as my other job that I talked about at the Southwest Marketing Advisory Center. That between both of those places, I worked, you know, between 20 and 30 hours a week.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm not on the agenda. I apologize. I'm Kara Brockett. I'm a student at Southwest Minnesota State, and I also serve as our student body president. Currently, I work 4 jobs during the year. I get paid to be the student body president. I work at our campus bookstore at the beginning and the end of the semesters for approximately 20 hours a week for 2 weeks at each end. And that allows me to get a discount on my textbooks, which helps significantly, but they're still in that $300 to $500 range. I take 19 credits at school. I work 20 hours at a local Starbucks, and then I have the option of health benefits through Starbucks, but I have to maintain 20 hours of work on average every week to qualify for those benefits. Thankfully, I'm still covered through my father's insurance plan with his company, and I work for a professor on campus 5 to 10 hours a week, depending on how much work she needs done. And so that has kept me plenty busy on my campus, and it barely covers the bills. I'm on a payment plan at my school to help minimize the debt. I still take out unsubsidized Stafford loans every semester and pay approximately $300 every month in a payment plan for my tuition.
And working 3 to 4 jobs, what kind of debt, what year are you in, and what kind of debt?
I'm a junior, and I'm currently sitting at approximately $20,000 of debt, and by the time I graduate, it'll be around 26 to 28. One thing that has really hit home for me is I had the opportunity to go to Italy with a global studies trip that our university offers, where we'd spend 3 weeks in Italy studying, and I had to turn it down because it would be another $4,000 of debt to take out that I had no way of making the money. I do work full-time jobs over the summer, and I took an opportunity through AmeriCorps this summer to get an education stipend that would help minimize my costs for this year and allow me to pay for it out of my pocket rather than taking out a private loan like I've done in the past.
Representative Dunn.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. My daughter was on the eight-year plan. She just got done with two master's degrees. But anyway, she always got health insurance from the college. Is that possible?
Yeah, our university does offer that. We have only one option, however, and the only reason I'm really familiar with it is international students are required to have the health insurance in case something were to happen. They need to have United States health insurance versus what some students have parents in these foreign countries that have insurance through their employer, but it's not qualified over in the United States or our university doesn't accept it. And the plans average about $100 a month for domestic students, and it ends up being about $1,000 a semester for international students just to have the most basic coverage. And in Marshall, Minnesota, that's very minimal. And most of the doctors that you would be able to go to and dentists, it's very minimal coverage. And if you have anything severe, you have to leave the town. And some students don't have that option.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Moll?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder, could you give us your name again? I'm sorry.
Kara Brockett.
Kara Brockett. Ms. Brockett, the last testifier before you, Clara Ware, has in her testimony here that cost her between $400 and $500 each semester, and I teach at BSU, Bemidji State University, and that's my experience with students, too. You said that you had to work at the college bookstore in order to get reduced prices. Could you answer a couple questions? First, is this a franchise that has taken over your college bookstore? And second, how has that, at least from your experience, do you think impacted the textbook prices?
Barnes & Noble does run our campus bookstore. I was not around when they had a previous company that was running the bookstore. I have a very close relationship with a woman that runs our bookstore, and she and I have worked together substantially over the past semester to try to open the campus community's eyes to what really impacts textbook prices and how getting teachers or professors to turn in their book orders can really help, and how that allows us to buy used books and then sell used books. And we have some students on campus that have started kind of an underground textbook swapping through the internet, where you can get online and post your book and then meet and swap books. And from my perspective, I think it impacts it, but I also know that publishers have played such a significant role in why textbooks are so expensive. And I know that, having worked there since the spring of my freshman year, I know that there are books that have been re-released almost every year, and those books are increasingly expensive with every semester, and the students just have no option. And if you get an old edition, it's often that the chapters are different and that you have no way of keeping up. I experienced that in one class where I was unaware that I had an old edition until about halfway through, when I realized at about chapter 6 the chapters were off because they threw in another chapter that was really just a previous chapter split into two. So it really had no difference in the material. I was still able to complete the course with my old edition of the textbook, but the chapters were just off. And I see the frustration in students when they bring their textbooks back and they say, well, I paid $120 for this book. Why can't I get any money back for it? And we have to explain to them, it's not our fault. We can't do anything about it. The publishers won't allow us to sell your used book because there's a new edition out or a new edition pending, which is even more frustrating.
Representative Moll, go ahead.
Thanks for your testimony on that. I think I'd like to bring this to the committee's attention that college students in general, because they're allowed, that they're able to borrow so much money, there are people in Minnesota and nationally who are making quite a tidy profit on behalf of the loans that you're being forced to take out, and I hear that from my students as well. And this is not the only entity that's doing quite well at our current higher education funding system. And I think these are some questions maybe we can continue to ask in this committee, Mr. Chairman, as to how we can perhaps keep the profit margins down to reasonable levels for those people who are serving our students.
Well, you know, is it Kara?
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that I heard you say that Barnes & Noble runs your, did you say that,
mm-hmm.
your bookstore? Something here isn't, you know, jiving in my brain when I think that we have a company that obviously is in business to make a profit running a bookstore. I know that the bookstore, I see, I don't want to put my chancellor, provost, president, whatever they're called from Mesabi Community College on the spot, but when I went to college you know, the college had the bookstore, and if they did make a profit, it probably went back into the system, I would hope. Let's see. Bernie, you want to come back? Nah, you don't have to. But it is interesting to note that, you know, now we seem to be betting out the bookstore even to the private sector to make money off our students when they're making enough money in the first place. So maybe President McCormick or someone, or probably Senator Janisich would be best to handle this when he comes in front of the committee and tell us all. At Southwest State, they can bid out the bookstore to a for-profit agency.
I do know a lot of the profit goes back into a scholarship pool in the university, and so that's one thing that we like to mention to students when they show frustration. But I know from our campus bookstore, their profit is very slim, and the university has thought ways of having their profit be back into the school system itself so that we can help pay for the student union costs of electricity and utilities and still maintain a scholarship fund, which is really important for our campus because we have a lot of first-generation students that don't have adequate funding to go to school.
Representative Stevenson, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment on this. I've got two young adults that have just gone through the college. One's getting, he's a junior. He'll be coming back from Iraq and going into the system, and then my daughter just graduated. So I understand the book issue, and it's always, I mean, I think it's probably shared with everybody in this committee as far as the cost of books at the universities and how they're constantly switching. And I think that would be something worth looking at for this committee in terms of what drives this continual revision of editions that could possibly have any impact on a diploma when you walk out the door. There should be some kind of moratorium that just says if you've got a book in this particular class, it ought to be at least 2 to 3 years where there's an opportunity for the students to turn those books over and get some of the money back. I think there's a tremendous abuse that's being taken place here in terms of the book industry. And I think the professors could be part of driving that that proposal because I think there's a tremendous incentive for them to write, become written, and then demand these requirements back. It would just be very interesting, I think, for this committee to take a look at and see exactly where all this stuff is coming from.
Representative Roof.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if you could talk about your respective schools. What's that tuition increase look? I know that the U of M was 4% this year and was down considerably from the other years as money has been coming from the legislature. Because it isn't the legislature that raises the tuition, not the schools that do. But you could comment on that.
I believe Southwest was right around 6% last year. I think Justin has the paperwork. But I know over the past 5 years, it was a 76% increase over the years, and it's gone down substantially. And I think one of the things that's really helped with that is our consultation process with our administration. We meet with them on a regular basis and discuss things that come up to us in ways that we see spending that we think personally as students could be cut and that we could reallocate that money in other areas and help either build our reserves or just lower tuition.
Representative Ruth, I would, you know, beg to differ with you, I guess, on the fact that the legislature doesn't control tuitions, because we do, and the less money we put into the higher education system, it's easy to shift onto the students, and that's exactly what has happened. Since Rudy Perpich was governor, we've treated higher education as the poorest stepchild in this state, and, I think at one time it was close to 70% of public education, higher education was paid for by state general fund dollars, and now it's down to about 50-50, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it's a direct result of the action of the legislature. That's one of the reasons I wanted, you know, all of us to understand what's going on in these students' lives, and there's complicated lives out there. Jennifer's a good example of one that can't control what's going on in her life, and yet, you know, we're burdening them with more than a home mortgage. So, you know, we're pretending around here at the legislature that we have a surplus, which we really don't have. We have a one-time surplus. I will agree to that we do have $1 billion on the bottom line approximately on June 30th of this year, but it's only $1 billion we can spend once. And, you know, maybe what we should do is think about, like, okay, we won the lottery. We won $1 billion, you know. Even me, a good, you know, Iron Range liberal, I'm not that fiscally irresponsible, and what I would do if I won the lottery is try to salt some money away to take care of me and my family and friends the rest of we could have a good time. But anyway, you know, take care of our rest of our lives. Maybe we should think about that with that little bit of surplus that we do have, is looking at setting up some kind of endowments, particularly for tuition for in the Minsky system. The university has a permanent university fund, which is an endowment of which $30 million is now called Iron Ring Scholarship. It comes from Tackney royalties, and we've got an endowment just in 12 years that we built up to $30 million, and it's giving every incoming Minnesota freshman that's attending the four different campuses $1,000 to $2,000 a year to help them out. Maybe we can do something like that with a little bit or a little piece of our budget. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know how much money this committee is going to get, and I wouldn't, you know, expect that we're going to get a lot. I don't know that. And Justin, you know, I'm assuming, are you a student representative to the Minsky Board?
No, I don't sit on the Minsky Board, no.
But you know what's going on there, and if we don't give them their $177 million that they're asking for over the biennium, and we don't let them have that 4% increase, they're just going to throw more tuition increases at you. So to buy it down to zero, I think, costs us another $70 million, and then another 70 or so at the university. It's about the same. So now with the university's request and with Minsky's request and with, to hold tuition at zero and zero just for one biennium would be about $500 million. And that's an ongoing. Now that's $500 million this biennium, $500 million plus inflation the next biennium. That's tough decisions this committee got to make. So let me throw this out at you students. If you had to raise money, where would you raise it? How would you raise it? Or would you raise it at all? Justin, you jump in first.
I can jump into this. I don't have a lot of information about this. I understand during a lot of the discussions and campaigning and things, there's talk of corporate loopholes and those kind of things. But I think anywhere but the students right now. I think the students over the last 5-6 years have paid their taxes. And I don't know where to get it. And if you want me to look into it more, I will. The students have paid their taxes over the last couple of years. And it would be great to see some kind of a change in philosophy, I think, up here as to where the money's going. Educating our population, just to me, aside all the student, you know, I represent the students and all that. I think that's the economic engine of the country, is having an educated population. And we're slipping behind nationally in Minnesota, and we're slipping behind in the world. So, you know, we have to change that philosophy, in my opinion. And I don't know where the money comes from, but I think that, you know, there's places we can look, I'm sure. And I'm open to pretty much any of them. So,
well, in agreement with you that the students certainly have paid their fair share over the last decade, for sure. Representative Haas, Clark, and Norton. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the movement of books so that you have to buy a new book and your old book isn't worth anything has been a long time broken, at least from the perspective of students. I mean, it may not even be broken, but I know I didn't feel very happy about it. And some of the books I actually studied out of were made of clay, so that's been wrong.
Parchment, I was going to say.
Also, I think we're going to face a concern that when the dollars are going to drive the choice here for education, and we're going to see a movement from our four-year to our two-year degrees, and we're going to start seeing a movement of majors that they're not going to be selecting a major of desire, whether that be teaching or social work or whatever that might be, to the major that has an opportunity to pay a higher salary. So there's going to be some shifts caused by this that were probably not predictable at first glance, and I thought I would just bring that up for others to think about.
Thanks, Haas. That's a very good point. And with future trends, who knows what, you know, we do need an educational field. I do know this, that as all of us baby boomers begin to retire, there's a huge, huge knowledge loss out there, and we've got to have these students prepared, whether they're going to be electricians and carpenters or rocket scientists and computer scientists. You know, we're losing a lot of mental capacity out there, I guess, from experience, and we've got to train these young people coming up, and it's a big job for this committee, and trends are a very important part of it. Thank you for bringing that up. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, you know, one of the ways that a lot of the pretty low-income students that I represent are getting into college these days is by joining ROTC in high school or college. And I just want to raise that because, you know, it's kind of a poor people's army in some ways that we're creating with that. And I'm wondering what it's, I don't know if any of the students here have any experience with that. But if not, I guess I'd like to kind of look into that because I've run into some constituents lately where that's really a concern. And I can speak from some personal experience with two brothers, so that's the only way they got to go to college off the farm. So I'm just wondering if we could get some numbers on that and get some data and try to find out, you know, what we're doing with our, you know, there's different choices that people have, but that is a significant number, I think, at least in a district that I represent, and probably some others where you have a lot of poor kids, that's what they're turning to. And, you know, it may be a free choice, it may not be a free choice.
We'll have Mr. Berg check into that. And while we're on the subject of this whole issue, and Representative Haas and Severson are carrying the governor's bill, you know, it's pretty easy to introduce legislation, and like the governor said, he can't imagine anybody that would be voting against veterans, and it's probably very hard to do that, but it's also pretty easy to pound your chest and talk about helping them and then not have the money to help them.
Exactly.
That bill, my understanding is a $70 million?
$74 million
cost, and there's a lot of pieces to it besides the education piece, and my understanding is none of it's going to come through this committee, at least I hope it doesn't, because we don't have any money for the students that aren't in the Army or the Reserves. So, you know, it's always good to propose something, but it's tougher to raise the taxes to spend it. And, you know, I'm kind of a Robin Hood kind of guy. I always cheered for Robin Hood. I realize there are some folks on the other side of the aisle that cheered for the Sheriff of Nottingham, but, you know, not this kid. So, you know, I'm always trying to redistribute wealth, you know, fairly. So, Representative Gunther, I know you were for the Sheriff of Nottingham. You can tell by looking at that. Okay, Representative North, go ahead. And who did you cheer for, Representative North?
I want to thank the students for coming. It's been very eye-opening. I think I would like to, I'm not reminding the students, they already know this, but the committee, as we've listened to students for 3 days, is there are families and parents that are equally affected. I know a greater number of our students today are non-traditional, and so it, in fact, impacts students probably to a larger degree than it did even just a few years ago when I went to college. But we have a lot of parents who are and families who are suffering in similar ways than these students. It could be families that have the loans rather than the student trying to save their children from perhaps doing what we did to ourselves. The other question I heard, I think Kara mentioned this payment plan, which has not been offered my daughter, and I'm wondering how it seems to me some sort of payment plan as opposed to loans might be more reasonable for students who are working and could pay as they go and get to that. And I'm sure it's a nightmare for the colleges, but I'm wondering if we could look into or get some more information about how many schools offer payment plans rather than, I believe my daughter's bill said you need to pay this all up front, and it was very strict about needing to pay it before the end of the first week of school or something. So I'm wondering how lenient we are and if any of the other students have done payment plans.
Ms. Brockett, do you want to comment on that first?
Sure, I would like to. Our school does it through a group called SACS that's based in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you as a student are then responsible for contacting SACS. It's a $30 fee. You have the option of paying $300 or 15% down, And so for me, last semester, after my loans and my scholarships, and then I chose to live on campus because of a scholarship that paid half of my room and board, ended up being slightly cheaper to sacrifice living space and communal living and live on campus than to live in an apartment off with roommates. So I chose that option, and it left my bill at about $1,300. So I paid $300 down, and then in the months of September, October, and November, I paid right around $300 each month to pay off my plan, and it was taken out of my checking account on the 20th of every month, which was a little stressful, I won't deny that. But it was an option that I had to seek out, and it was often very confusing because they didn't always take it out on the 20th, and so I didn't know if it would come out on the 22nd or the 24th. And I contacted my financial aid office in the business services, and they gave me the amount that I owed, and they said, well, this is what you will tell FACS that you owe, and then they work it out. And then FACS pays the school instead of me, and I pay FACS, and then FACS makes $30 off of me. Southwest also has the option of a $25 late fee, and then you can go in, and it's a 2 or 3 week grace period where you have to go in and pay off the rest of your bill. And one of the other options they have is to defer your housing payment, and so then you can pay half of it up front and half of it halfway through the semester. And I know students who have done that as well as an option to pay, and that way they pay their tuition up front and their housing later. So those are the options we have.
Anyone else?
Also, yeah. I also participated in this plan this last time around because I just couldn't bring myself to take out any more loans. And so I tried and worked, barely made my payments. But this type of program is offered throughout the Minsky system. It was something that the board thought was very important, and they passed a policy requiring the schools to offer a program like this. Some schools went with FACS. I'm not sure what all the other ones went. I know Southwest went with the FACS program. But all the schools are required to offer something like this in the Minsky system.
So, Justin, is the Minsky is offering this, but they're contracting it out in this case?
Correct.
Yeah. So maybe that's the question why Minsky just doesn't do it themselves. Thank you, Norton, for bringing that issue up. Representative Hartman.
I was just wondering if any of you had classes in high school that were like home economics or financial literacy where you did some calculations of if on my first day of college I take out a $15,000 loan, this is what I have to pay back at 3% interest, this is what I have to pay back at 6% interest. And do you think such a class should be a requirement of high school graduation?
Come on, Don, is it Mr. Trotman?
I remember coming in as a freshman and wondering, how am I going to pay for college? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have the foggiest idea. I was, like many of the students, a first-generation student coming into the system. And my parents were like, well, we can't afford to help you, but here's the loan options. So I went ahead and, you know, did the FAFSA and all that kind of stuff and got that going through, but I still owed money, so I went ahead and took out the gold loans and went into the private industry to get my loans without really, as an 18-year-old kid, really understanding what I was doing. You know what I mean? I was taking out loans at, like, you know, 9% or something like that. I can't remember the rates originally when I was taking out loans coming out of high school without any regard or idea of what I was doing. And I think I could have benefited as something offered in high school, like perhaps what
Representative Hartman
said, or perhaps coming in as your freshman year, that really broke it down and gave you a good idea of how your money, how you're borrowing, and the effects, the long or short term and long term effects of different borrowing and trends and different things like that. I yield for any other questions.
Ms. Ware, do you want to come down and comment on that? And then we'll go to Representative Norris.
Like I said, the first issue that we have is making sure they're in academic standing when they come into college, because that brings them a lot of scholarship. So I was talking to some people that are down there for senators, that I think what you should do is you should have something like a mentorship program. But you see a lot of times, like now, you see kids going to various colleges and applying for, they go on these trips where they go to different colleges. But I propose that you know, you take some of the tax dollar money and put it into, when the kids show up on campus, that Metro State, Bemidji, Southwest, whoever approach these freshmen, because so a lot of students, freshmen, are scared when they come from high school to come to college, but then when you don't tell them about the loans, everybody just says, just go get the money. That's the word around the school. But when they come there, show them how much tuition is going to cost them for the first 4 years in the degree that they have, and give them a tour around the college and make sure that's the college of the choice. Because I had a friend that went from MTTC to Hamline University, spent more money in her first semester than I would have on in 2 or 3 semesters. So that's the difference between community. I went to community, then I went to private. Everybody know if you go to private, doubles the tuition. So that's the thing. I think what it is educational pieces are missing for these freshmen. So who's going to be the advocate when they show up in school? That's another something that I would like to see proposed inside of the colleges, the advocacy. So when the freshmen reach the college, they know what they face instead of getting to point where I'm at and facing all that money. So I yield to that.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just trying to recall in the testimony we've had from all of these students, I don't recall hearing much about the post-secondary option and why that hasn't been utilized, or maybe it has.
That's a good point, and another good idea by a former Iron Range governor, Rudy Burbidge, which actually has caused a lot of controversy out there in school districts, and I'm sure we've all heard from it in the past. I think up north we've tried to work out with the colleges and the high schools a pay program. Some of the high schools have worked that, or school districts have worked that out with the community colleges up there. Students are able to go on their own. But did any of you students take advantage of post-secondary options when you were in high school? No, that's another thing, Mr. Chair, that we have to probably make the students more aware of. And I don't think that the school districts want a lot of them to know that option is available.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to follow up and ask if there was a specific reason why. Or it just, I know sometimes it's distance to a college is part of it.
Mr. Howden, go ahead.
Yeah, I think absolutely right. Distance to college is the right. I grew up in Cannon Falls, and the closest college, community college for us is Inver Hills Community College. And that's it's a hefty distance to drive on a daily basis if you have classes. I also think there are many obstructions to getting into the post-secondary option in high school. I know that it was not an option for me because of the classes that I had to take up until the time that I graduated for college, and there was no way for me to get into a post-secondary option. And I also know that it's not something that, like was previously stated, that the school districts talk about or that you hear a lot. I think in my high school, I knew a couple of students who were able to take advantage of that, but it was almost caused by a renegade teacher almost that, was going around this, what the administration...
For the record.
So it's not something that is talked about in the high school, especially where I went.
Okay, thanks.
I actually tried to pursue that option, but in my high school at least, you had to be in the top 10% of your class to be able to do it, so only just a couple of students could, and I was unable to do that.
Representative Norris, I think, haven't been around here longer than just about everybody on this committee except Representative Clark, who left now. I remember, the reason is, at least whether it was ever fully put on the tape or not, I know Governor Perpich's concern was that some, special education for advanced students had been cut to those, programs at the high school level, and this was a way for those that maybe were getting bored at high school and, those advanced programs, calculus or whatever it was, that weren't being offered anymore. This was a way for them to keep an interest in high school while getting some of their higher education out of the way. But I think it evolved into something much more than that, and the concern is, nothing's for free, as you well know. Being a good businessman, you Republicans are, nothing's for free. So, when you take money from the school district and give it to the community college or whatever, how does that play into the whole system, too?
Mr. Chair, I understand that, and in in my own family, my daughter chose not to do it because she didn't want to lose those 2 years of high school experience. But right now we're talking about costs, so I'm just bringing it up because it is a substantial savings and option that if students can take advantage of it, sure, other people don't like it, but
we didn't think about the either because today. Then my children still listen to the word no. Now they don't anymore. Okay, Representative Hartman.
I just want to share with the committee. I did my first year of college fully on the post-secondary, so I got my freshman year basically free, and that was very much appreciated by my parents. So,
keep reminding us how young you are. Okay, well, Representative Black.
Chairman, I was a teacher.
I know you didn't go to post-secondary.
It's true, although in some respects I was a non-traditional student. But anyway, I taught in a area learning center, and we encouraged students who were non-traditional students to check out the post-secondary option when it was available or fit their needs. And that was another intent, I think, of Governor Purpich to reach out to students who may not follow the regular track. And it was a good way to help students think about college that they otherwise would not have.
Well, Representative Nornes, you bring up a good point, and we're going to have to, you know, look at that. You know, this committee has a unique charge, I think, this year because we've got all the workforce development programs that we're going to be hearing about soon. We're going to be hearing from non-traditional students who have taken advantage of those programs, everything from, you know, workforce development, displaced workers, displaced homemakers, everything else that we'll be looking at. And I don't know if any of you had that opportunity available to you because most of you are traditional students. But we'll be looking at those things. We appreciate your testimony and thank you all for coming. And on Thursday, we have the university students coming in. We may start to look at a few bills that have been funneled down through us too. As an example, if things go as quickly on Thursday as they did today, maybe we'll take up a couple of bills that are just policy bills. Also, before we leave today, if any of you have an interest, Representative Thiessen is trying to put together a disabled working group for folks with disabilities and helping them get through not only education, but perhaps transportation issues and work issues, things that probably would pertain to this committee. So if any of you have a special interest in that, tell me afterwards and I'll give your name, or within the next week or so, I'll give your name to Representative Thiessen. With that, members, if there's anything else from the committee, if not, then we'll see you on Thursday in the meeting's adjourned.